that was a perfect setup, actually, Tim, for what I'm going to say. We didn't rehearse this at all. I thought you'd probably need more slides. You've just not had enough slides. So I'm not going to speak at all about the disease system or the healthcare system, the health services system. I'm going to suggest that one of the reasons we continue to see the health inequities that we have in Australia and around the world is because we keep trying to retreat it in the health system, in the healthcare system, and in the disease system. And the sorts of issues that many colleagues are speaking about, have spoken about today, actually takes us right beyond just the mandate of what is possible within that system. So who has the responsibility? So when we hear Catherine King in a one line speak about the social determinants of health and health inequities, and in a response to a question around health and all policies, I think it tells you that there's actually nobody, there's no institution, there's no politician, there's no organisation who's actually taking any responsibility for the wider determinants of health inequities. And I think we have a fundamental problem. Who is going to take on universal basic income, as Tim spoke about earlier? Who is mandated to do that and to pay attention to that in a way that addresses health inequities? I think we've got a fundamental problem. And when we are posed with the situation of, well, let's address what we've currently got, and let's make do with what we've got, frankly, it's not good enough, because we continue to have the sorts of issues that we've got within the life expectancy and the health outcomes that we've got in Australia. So my rant, and it is going to be a rant, it's not good enough as it currently is. I'm really worried that we don't have any institution or political leader who's actually taking responsibility for the things that keep us well. I think we've got a lot, and I'm not suggesting for a second the sorts of issues that we've been speaking about so far today within the healthcare system. They address issues of inequity to do with healthcare, but I just don't think they address the wider issues. So that's the start of my rant. Let me keep going. So I'm going to speak about sort of four things in terms of how do we shift the paradigm in thinking about these sorts of issues. I'm going to suggest that we need to focus not so much on the pathologizing of the problem. I was originally an epidemiologist. I love pathologizing the problem, and it matters at particular points in time. But the focus on the how of shifting that paradigm. We've spoken, I think, about the challenges of moving beyond the silos. So again, when we talk about health and all policies, as if that's an easy thing to do, and as if anybody actually believes that it's an important thing to do, what we're talking about is breaking down the silos between different sectors. And that, frankly, I think is all about breaking down the issues of power and letting go of power. We are predominantly health professionals in this room. We own this agenda. We think we own this agenda. And letting that go is a challenge to our professional status, to our well-being in that space, I think. I've seen that all my career, and every time it's the health person who ultimately wants to have the final say as to what happens in this space. And it also means, I'm a researcher, it means we in public health, we've also got to let go of power and break down the silos between the sorts of issues that you're speaking about there, Tim. That's completely outside the mental scope of epidemiology and public health in its traditional sense. And actually, it's kind of good to work with social scientists and people from the humanities. So let's move beyond the silos. And then the question of the institutions for the future. So currently, I think, so we could think of institutions within government, within the political sphere, within the academic sphere, within the civil society sphere. Within those various institutions, do we have the technical capacity. So have we seen, I think we have seen, some of the hollowing out of technical skills within government agencies, for example? Do they have the people who are able to do that breaking down of the disciplinary silos, or breaking down of the sectoral silos in a way that synthesizes across? Do they have the synthesizers for the future? Are people within the various organisations sitting in this room today, are you mandated to think outside the box? Are you empowered within your organisations to say, frankly, the status quo is not good enough and we're going to do it differently? We're going to do it in some of the ways that Tim and Mohammed spoke about earlier. Are you asked to take risks? Are you rewarded for taking risks? I know within the university sector right now, most definitely we are not. And I suspect that would be true in many organisations currently. And is every single decision that is made in terms of thinking about policy, thinking about practice, thinking about services, whatever, is it based on principles and is it based on values? I think it's based on some values, but maybe, well, from my perspective, not the sorts of values I'd love to see. So if you're talking about health reform agenda, what are the principles and values that should drive that? So very alarming that some of the discussion about we don't even have a system. We do have a system, and it's a system based on a particular type of value set. The question is how to shift that. And then the fourth point is, I think, the celebration of both the incremental and transformative change. Incremental is so important. It's what helps gradually shift, and I'm thinking here particularly within the bureaucracy, getting any sort of shift within bureaucracy in a positive way from a health equity perspective has to be applauded, and that's incremental change, and that helps to create sustained change. And then I'll speak about transformative issues as well. So there to me, if I'm trying to think about how do we address the sorts of issues to do with health inequities, taking a social determinants approach, and whatever you want that to mean, these are some of the things for us, I think. The second sort of point I want to make is, does anybody actually care about inequities? So I think the discussion, and so many people in the room, of course, do, but I think the discussion we've had is there are poor people or there are socially disadvantaged people, and we need to do something to help those people, and that's very, very, very important. But surely we must also ask the question of addressing the underlying drivers of why those people are the way they are. Yeah. So addressing the needs of those people, and that happens across a lot of the issues spoken so far within the disease system. But what about some of those systems that create poverty? And again, coming back to the point that Tim Woodruff was speaking about earlier. But frankly, if you hear the political discourse, the public discourse, are we remotely close to that? I think we're a little bit there in terms of let's do something for the people in need, the poor groups. But I think we're so far away from actually wanting any sort of systemic change around inequity within society more broadly. So that question of what is it then, if what are we trying to achieve? And colleagues have pointed to a lot of this already. But the idea of a vision for us as a society, and that's why I'm not talking about a health or a disease system. I'm talking about a system that contributes to better well-being, that contributes to better health, and does that in an equitable way. And so the idea of, and I repeat what others have said, so economic policy used to improve the lot of all, conditions that actually support us to flourish, so the idea of social policy, of health policy that enable people to flourish, of course, based on a premise of inclusive systems and societies that welcome difference. Let's not have the sorts of bigotry that we have within the country in so many different ways, and all done with the lightest environmental practice. So if we were to say, okay, well, that's the sort of system that we're trying to work towards, And of course, the medical, the healthcare part of it is part of it, but that wider system. We live in a system. We are complex, adaptive systems. That's what we are as humanity. We know that. How do we get to it? And there's, excuse the French, there's a shitload of evidence about the sorts of actions that can be taken across a whole variety of those policy areas. So I despair when a minister says to me, yes, Sharon, you've described that lovely conceptual idea about addressing these sorts of issues. What can we do about it? It's just lazy, lazy policy making if you tell me that there is no evidence about what can be done. This is just an example of a report that we did for the Asia-Pacific region, but there's a load of evidence out there as to what can be done across a whole variety of areas. So we've got it, and then constantly we then get another leaflet that says we'll stop eating junk food, or stop, do a bit more physical activity, or whatever the leaflet might be, or it's the default into the health services. And I don't mean to be disrespectful at all of the health services, I'm just saying there is a lot more. And it means the health services cop the flak, because you can't, as the health service providers, address all of these sorts of issues. So, how do we shift the paradigm then? How do we make it happen? So, the thinking and working in systems, we do it all the time. All the time. And the fact that we are complex adaptive systems means that things can change. So, the notion of, right now, we've got all of these problems, it's just all despair, I don't think it's true. Things change. They might not change at the speed we want them to change, but if we're paying attention to it, it's how do you recalibrate that system as change agents in this room? How is that recalibrated? And then I think I just want to touch on two aspects of this reimagining of the structural power and networks of hope. Basically, structure and agency at play. There's a picture and some words to do with trade policy. So I told you I wasn't going to speak about the healthcare system at all. Trade policy, trade and investment policy affects our everyday life. It affects the conditions that allows us to flourish. It can do that positively and it can do it negatively. So you might say, okay, well that's a big, big economic policy issue. One, does it really matter for health? And I can tell you separately, but there's a load of ways it matters for health. But then second, okay, for us within the healthcare setting, what on earth have we got to do? What voice have we got in recalibrating this big structural regulatory machine? Well, there was a huge public health win. I say that with a caveat because there's all sorts of problems associated with it. But when this big regional trade agreement, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, it's now in a new iteration, but when the TPP was signed in 2015, there was a tobacco carve-out. Now, all we need to take away from that was there were ways of using legal text in this regulatory instrument, this trade policy instrument, that was good for public health. So we can use economic policy. So when the minister, Catherine King, says, well, actually, it's the social policy discussion that takes place. What about the health, the economic policy, because it matters? And then finally, and this is what Michael Moore was speaking about earlier when he was talking about the gun control discussion at marches in the US. This is a picture of March for Our Lives. So there were over 800 cities across the world that got involved in that. And I've spoken about that as networks of hope. There was collective action around gun control that affects more disadvantaged communities compared to more advantaged communities across the world. There's a public health intervention through these networks, these coalitions that colleagues were speaking about earlier on. And that's all done through that shared vision that Martin Laverty was pointing towards earlier, that people have been speaking about throughout the course of the day. That's the last slide. So really, for me, if we're going to imagine a health system, or a system for health and a system for health equity, then it pushes us into thinking about these sorts of issues, thinking about incremental change. There was incremental change within a trade policy text, and there I think we're about to see transformative change through that network of hope that's arisen up through the March for Life, I hope. And I'll leave it there.